Connection and Community Resilience, taking place at the Gitche-Zibi Center for the Arts in Brainerd September 22nd and 23rd. More info at sewingroom.org. That is spelled S-O-W-I-N-G. Weather today, mostly sunny, highs in the upper 70s, slight chance of showers and thunderstorms, and our lows tonight in the upper 50s. Time for Ham Radio.
Coming up, we bring you Ham Radio, produced by KAXE, KBXE in northern Minnesota, and made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota. You'll hear Amy Thielen, James Beard Award-winning cookbook author and writer, along with Heidi Holton, talking about summer cooking and the summer kitchen. Are you experiencing the bounty of the summer garden and not quite knowing what to do with it? We'll be joined by Elena Levina, who is a contributor to the new cookbook, Kitchens of Hope: Immigrants Share Stories of Resilience and Recipes from Home. We'll hear about her family recipe from Belarus, holodnik, or summer beet soup. That is all coming up on Ham Radio, Cooking with Amy Thielen, the Summer Kitchen Edition, with theme music by Minnesota's own Jeremy Messersmith.
For KAXE News, I'm Larissa Donovan with a special edition of the Up North Report. Drivers in Bemidji and nearby communities may or may not have noticed new cameras attached to utility poles. Installed by the Paul Bunyan Drug Task Force, the devices are automatic license plate readers, or ALPRs. The devices take snapshots, which capture the time, date, place, and vehicle description, as well as plate information every time a vehicle passes by. Paul Bunyan Drug Task Force Commander Dave Hart of the Beltrami County Sheriff's Office says the devices were installed to further investigations into drug trafficking.
But they also serve, you know, a huge benefit to our member agencies of the Paul Bunyan Drug Task Force to assist them in their investigations for serious crime, violent crime, missing persons.
Many ALPR systems today use artificial intelligence to process the license plate images into data files. Vehicles of interest are searched by registered users and stored into a data file called a hot list. While Minnesota law dictates how this data can be used in criminal investigations, civil rights groups like the American Civil Liberties Union are concerned that this type of surveillance can be abused. Alicia Granzi, a staff attorney at the Minnesota chapter of the ACLU, explains.
There's definitely a concern that this data is going into databases that can be accessed by federal agencies, in particular, the Department of Homeland Security, ICE. The data is supposed to be used for criminal investigation.
Hart says he understands the concerns, but the task force and its use of ALPRs are in full compliance with the state law.
We're not trying to hide anything. If we wanted to conceal them or make them more covert, you know, we would have done that, but that's kind of not the purpose of them. The company that we're using is one of the largest and most reputable companies for ALPR technology in the country.
But concerns persist, including as recently as this past week. The Illinois Secretary of State issued an order for law enforcement agencies to cease sharing license plate data with federal or out-of-state agencies. The action came out of concern that Flock Safety and its privacy algorithms did not adhere to state law. This is the same company that made the ALPRs placed in the Bemidji area. The same day, the company announced it had ended a pilot program with federal agencies. Minnesota lawmakers initially put ALPR rules on the books in 2015. St. Louis County has 10 that were installed in 2024. The task force's 7 are posted in fixed locations around the city of Bemidji, and 1 is in nearby Northern Township. There is also 1 each in Park Rapids, Akeley, Manoman, and Pine River. Commander Hart says the recent federal designation of Beltrami County as a high-intensity drug trafficking area served as the main impetus for installing the ALPRs, but he notes the technology could also assist in an abduction case. Bemidji Mayor George Prince says the council was not notified about the ALPR installation, but he discussed his privacy concerns with the Bemidji Police Chief.
My quick take on it is it seems like it is a good thing overall and that it aids in investigations, but I'm certainly open to additional conversation on it.
Police in Grand Rapids are using mobile ALPR tech. Grand Rapids Police Chief Andy Morgan says the devices are integrated with the department's dash and body camera system.
Where we are now is agreements between Minnesota and the providers and the agencies using this technology that, you know, allows for that information to flow more freely than it has in the past.
Minnesota law says that data collected by ALPRs can only be compared to a statewide data repository, but Flock Safety promotes its capabilities with a network of 20 billion monthly reads across 4,600 agencies. Granzi says this is worrisome.
It's only supposed to really be pinging with the Minnesota license plate data file. The way that this statute is written, it's like, no, you can't have this central repository. You're not supposed to have that, but they do.
Instances of federal agencies accessing statewide or even national data have put some lawmakers and citizens on edge. But Flock Safety maintains that it doesn't own the data, and it's the agencies who own it and decide how it is shared. Read our deep dive on this topic at kaxe.org. That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Larissa Donovan, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is made possible by Woodland Bank, providing customers with personal and business banking solutions, as well as offering Kasasa checking accounts. You can learn more online at woodland.bank.
You're listening to Ham Radio on KAXE, Cooking with Amy Thielen.
I remember everything, every song you sang to me, making coffee every morning. Doesn't matter where I go, another day.
Summers here in northern Minnesota are hot, humid, and short. The vegetables get a cold, slow start, and then when the days get long, they ripen all at once. It's a deluge and a great opportunity. Summer cooking is radically different from winter cooking. There's just a different rhythm to it. It's more improvisational, more inspired by ingredients. It's a little more like jazz. I mean, I think of winter cooking, Heidi, in this way. You find a recipe that you want to make. Maybe like a stew, something to fit your mood, something you want to coddle all day long, you know, and then you go to the store. But in the summer, it's kind of reversed. You might go to the store or the market or your garden, and then you cast around looking for a recipe.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Is it like that for you?
Yeah, I think it's different. It's what I get at the farmer's market, what might be growing. I try to find recipes of the excess that I have.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I find some great meat producer, like I'm going to have brats, it's going to be good, which I normally wouldn't do in the wintertime.
Right. Do you do the thing where you stew them in beer?
I do not. I just grill them.
I think that's like more of a Wisconsin thing, but okay. It's just like micro-regional.
Yes.
Like, it's not our micro-region to do that. No. It's good, though.
Yeah.
It's really good.
I bet.
So you grew up on the lake part-time, right? So what are some of those memories of summer lake food?
We had a family resort, very small, in Brainerd when I was a little kid, and it was all about fishing. My family's obsessed with fishing.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, it was so fun as a kid because you get new playmates every week that would come into one of the seven cabins, you know?
Oh, right, yes.
But I had to work because it was our family business. I had to sell the worms and sell the pop and do all the stuff. But it was always a fish fry.
Okay.
It was always a fish fry, like, on their last night of staying in the cabins. And if it was a little bit of a chillier summer, my dad made the fish. He did a great like shore lunch thing with coconut. And then my dad, early in his life, worked at a bread testing company.
Really?
So he always made the bread in our family. So that's what it reminds me of. A lot of beer too, and coolers and that kind of thing. And a big watermelon. My mom would make this watermelon that had a handle.
Oh, she
really
did the basket?
So cool. You'd worked all week long hoping there'd be enough fish so we could all celebrate together.
Right. Well, really, this should be called Fish Radio, I think. I mean, honestly, we've talked about fish for every episode.
That's me. I'm infiltrating.
No. It's just natural. It's happening. I do love that you're talking about cooking outside and bringing that fire outside, because when I think about summer cooking, I think about crock pots on the porch.
Oh.
My mom would make like this pulled beef. And I do too. I make like a kind of like a barbacoa, stuff like that.
I have never thought of that because I do it the opposite way. In the winter, that's my freezer. So oh, why definitely. Wouldn't I do it the other way? That's a great
the
idea.
The porch is really just either a heater or a freezer, right? Yeah.
Sure is.
But I love talking about like cooking outside, cooking on the fire. Our first guest, Elena Lenova, we called her to talk about a recipe that we saw in a new book called Kitchens of Hope, which is a cookbook of immigrant recipes and stories. It's assembled by Lee Dean, who's my editor at the Star Tribune, and it's affiliated with Advocates for Human Rights, which she also volunteers for. Elena Lenova is based in St. Paul. She's a home cook. She's a native of Belarus. And we were really interested in talking to her about her beet soup recipe. But then she does talk about cooking on the fire.
After hearing about this recipe, I think I want to try.
It's really delicious, and it's also just like so beautiful, so you can garnish it with all the different kinds of things, and a little crushed ice, a little bit of cucumber. I mean, it's and the base is like kefir or mm-hmm. She'll tell us what it is.
All right, coming up, we're learning more. This is Ham Radio.
I've heard so many stories from old timers around me in northern Minnesota of how they would have like this outdoor kitchen that they would use for big projects that would be generating a lot of heat that they didn't want in the house, or for canning, preserving. Yes. And when I'm standing in my little kitchen, I don't have AC, and I'm standing in my kitchen and I'm like sweating and dying because all the steam from the canning pot, you know. I mean, do you remember any of those in Belarus? Did you guys have outdoor kitchens?
Well, same thing, right? Did not have AC. And we did a lot of cooking even outside. Like my mom would make, it's a very well-known dish across Asian republics. It's called plov. I don't know if you know, it's like rice pilaf. It's Afghani dish, it's Uzbeki dish. So she would make it directly on like fire, you know, outside because for the same reason. Yeah, I mean, you don't want to cook all this in the house.
Yeah, that sounds, so it's like rice pilaf with like meat and vegetables, spices, but cooking it outside is kind of like Spanish paella.
Yes. I know my brother does it here now. Like he just has this fire going outside and cooking. Like my sister-in-law is cooking some meat and potatoes in a big iron cast. I think it's such a great idea. You spend so much more time outside. I kind of use my grill for all outdoor cooking. And I remember my mom would always have the door open for that reason, right? So the kitchen was like right there where we walk in. You know, it's just also like you walk in, kick your shoes off, and then there is a kitchen. And so she would can a lot of things probably more like in August, September. So there would be jars everywhere. And then we'd have to take them down to the cellar because we had like a homemade cellar.
That's exactly like my grandma's house. You'd walk in. There was like, I don't know, a foot for taking your shoes off. And then there was a basement, so you didn't want to tip backward. But then you'd walk in and there was a table and it was small. You're right in the kitchen and like eight people would be around that table. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You go there and you like look through the jars.
All the jars. So do you do that? Do you preserve stuff?
Not as much. I'm really lucky my mom lives nearby. She still can some things. She really likes to make fresh, like even if it's pickled, it's just fresh. I have my favorite quick pickled dill pickles recipe that I always do. So she would do the same with tomatoes, peppers, like cabbage, anything.
So tell me about this beet soup.
Okay, so beet soup. I'm still wondering who created it first. There is a Russian recipe, Belarusian recipe, Ukrainian recipe. There is a similar version in Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia. And there are different variations.
You know, I went to Latvia, and that's why when I saw this, because I had something similar in Latvia, and it was so good. So tell me about these variations or the one that you like.
My favorite one about this recipe is that you can literally pre-boil the vegetables, beets, eggs, and then you just kind of throw it on last minute. You just have some beets you shred, mix it with water, add some salt. you could add those cucumbers right there. And I add a few radishes in sometimes. Mm-hmm. I would shred that.
So it's like a really bright pink. And like, yeah. What's your liquid base?
Well, liquid base would be just water and kefir.
Kefir. Mm-hmm. You can buy that almost everywhere in the Twin Cities, right?
Oh, you could even make it.
Oh.
Yes. My friend gave me kefir grains. Okay. And you have to kind of keep them in the fridge and feed them milk. And then you just throw them in a jar with milk and they just stay for 24 hours and you got kefir.
So it's kind of like a liquidy yogurt.
Yeah. So I think this recipe for halodnik with kefir is just much milder. Mm-hmm. But I even tell people sometimes, if you don't have kefir, make it water-based and then just add sour cream. Just a couple tablespoons sour cream and an egg, dill, more fresh herbs, even like parsley.
We're going to use this as the community recipe for this.
All right.
Week. Yeah.
All right.
And use your photograph too that's in the book.
Oh, thank you.
So what else is summer food to you, like now? What else are you eating in the summertime when you don't want to heat up the house?
Something very simple, like just grill outside with lots of vegetables. You know, I'm really lucky to be able to travel, and I've been to a few interesting places, and multicultural places just fascinate me. I love the spices and like Greece, for an example, right? Where oregano can go such a long way, changes everything when you add it to the salad, right? Or like just throw in some livers or meats with rosemary. Oh my gosh, it's delicious.
Rosemary and livers, really. And then on the grill.
Yes. Like, really, or like that little side stove of the grill, you know, like you can just kind of fry a couple things in there. There are great spices in Mediterranean, like Middle Eastern cooking. When I was in Israel a few years ago, I picked up a few spices in the market, like a bazaar market. And it's like all kinds of spices. It's just amazing. And so I would throw in like a shakshuka spice, even in like a meat marinade. And it works great. I don't know. Now I'm like looking at ChatGPT to give me ideas too. So
I hear that. I've resisted its charms so far, but I do hear, I read something about chefs even using it sometimes. When you were talking about Israel, that reminds me of a story. When I first moved back here, back to my hometown after New York, one of my first friends was this woman named Hagit, and she and her husband were from Israel. So they're Israeli and they're living in Park Rapids. She would invite me over for dinner all the time, you know, and it was great and vice versa. At one point, she kind of had this little thing. She's just like, Minnesotans, I don't know. She's like holding this jar of spice and she's like, they just don't use very much. Like I use a lot. Yeah. And she like takes the little plastic dealy off the top that makes like it a sprinkler. And she rips that off and she's just like pours half of it into something.
Yes, definitely. It's like a lot of spice. Yes. You know, my mom always used cumin a lot. I think I go through like a big jar. Like every few months I have to go like get more. It's just kind of easy to also make any recipes with that.
You're listening to Ham Radio on KAX.
So where are you shopping for vegetables in the summer?
Lately, I really like going to Untied Little Market. Like they have stands everywhere in Minnesota.
What's Untied?
I think it's a last name of a family that owns a farm.
Oh, yeah.
And they have this wonderful people. A lot of Ukrainians work in the farm stand. So I always make little conversations with them. They have just like enough of great produce and fresh strawberries through like October.
Really?
Yeah.
So where's that market? Is it St. Paul or Minneapolis?
I think they just have their own stands. There is one in Wayzata, one in the Prairie, Minnetonka, kind of across.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
cool.
Across Twin Cities.
Yeah, it sounds familiar. So they have strawberries. That means that they're probably growing strawberries in big hoop houses or greenhouses?
I think so. I think one of the people in the stand told me they have this under the bridge area. which is protected from, like, you know, too much rain, but they get enough sunlight, I guess, that they can grow it for much longer than, you know, strawberries usually go. Oh, those strawberries are so good.
Yeah. So what do you do with them? You just eat them or you
yeah.
eat something?
Yeah. Sometimes it's great to make like a little, you know, dessert or throw in the yogurt, but
you're not making jam or.
Between work and kids, I haven't done it maybe for a couple of years. I should do it again.
Well, strawberries are so fragile. Like of mm-hmm. all of the fruit, they seem to me the most delicate. I mean, when you freeze them, but they don't really come back. They're kind
of not the same flavor.
Mm-hmm. No. Whereas like raspberries, I'll go out and gather raspberries and freeze those and they're fine. But
yeah.
Strawberries don't last. I don't know. It's weird.
One strawberry I really miss here is that tiny, tiny wild strawberry. Have you tried those?
Yeah. So a friend we had on the show a few weeks ago, his name is Bruce Engelbretson, and he gathers those. He goes out and forages for the little wild strawberries, and then he makes jam. And he serves it at his annual Christmas Santa Lucia party. It's pretty fabulous. Like, they're so fragrant, you know?
Yes. They sell them by glass at the markets in Belarus. I've seen them in Europe, not as much. You know, just the same as like red currants and black currants. They're just so flavorful, yeah.
Can you buy currants where you're at now?
Sometimes, really rarely, I see them at like St. Paul Farmers Market.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there's some vendors that bring them over, but you could buy them frozen. So I like that. And my mother-in-law now has few bushes, so I could go just get them there.
Yeah, actually, I grow red currants and I grow black.
How do you make with them?
Well, the black currant, you know, has like it's more like a grape in terms of like having a tough skin.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the seed's a little smaller, but I just make like a juice jelly and I freeze it. We drink it.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite flavors. It's everywhere in Europe.
Yeah. Celebrating the season, right? I think we here have also the short summer that we just get all in, you know, everybody's just in, everybody's outside.
Right. Like you have to celebrate it and make it feel beautiful and color and flowers and bright flavors and berries. Yeah, I love it. I forget that plove over the fire. That really sparks something in me. I'm definitely going to try that.
This big heap of spice.
With lots of spice, not just a little. Well, this has been lovely. I think that so good talking to you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you too. I really enjoyed it.
It's Ham Radio on KAXE. It was so much fun talking to her.
Yeah, she's cool.
And it's actually going to be, this is our community recipe for this week, is, how do you say it?
Holodnik.
Holodnik. Do you think, I mean, I've been admitting to you all along, Amy, in this show about how I'm not, I thought I was a good cook till I spent time with you.
Oh, stop.
But can I do this? Can I do this beet
soup?
Oh, my
gosh. Because I
love,
you can do this.
Okay, I just needed a little reinforcement there.
So. Okay.
Not reimbursement, reinforcement. So that will be available to folks.
I really loved Elena hearing her talk about the plove. I don't know if that got a little bit lost, but
yeah.
So it's spelled P-L-O-V, if anybody wants to look that up. I've made paella over the fire, but never anything else. And I'm like, gosh, why am I holding myself back? I could be making all these other things over the fire.
I loved talking about the spices, and we just heard from a listener, our listener last week, who was cooking while made the onion pie.
You're
from Park Rapids.
Yeah.
She said, I'm making dinner while we listen. I was inspired by the farmer's market last weekend, and I got some things like kohlrabi and oyster mushrooms, and I'm adding the kohlrabi to a simple romaine salad with some fresh basil and a Caesar-like dressing. I agree. Lots of seasoning is the best, and my favorite spices are from burlap and barrel.
Oh, Rachel from Park Rapids, that's great. Kohlrabi, that's one of my favorite
summer ingredients. Do you like it?
Oh, well, I didn't even know about it until the new Midwestern cookbook.
Oh, really?
We had a dinner party once, my friends and I, and we cooked out of your cookbook. And we did the kohlrabi. You had it on ice. This would be a great thing right now. Do you remember this? The kohlrabi on ice with the spices and stuff. I love it. It is so good.
Yeah, a little crushed ice on top. And that's how they used to serve it in Piers, according to my mom and my dad. My parents are from that town, Piers, both of them. And they remember somebody serving it at the bar, on the bar.
Wow.
You go to the bar, you have beer, and then you have kohlrabi sliced with a little ice. I don't know if that's a memory or a real thing, but geez, sounds good.
Also, you mentioned your editor from the Star Tribune.
Lee Dean.
Editor of this cookbook that Elena is in, Kitchens of Hope. Mm-hmm. And she was listening to last week's and heard me talking about my mom's old Schwann's box that I saved that is filled with cutout Star Tribune recipes that really bring me back. They make me miss my mom, but now it actually makes me very happy. So I really like it.
Yeah, Lee Dean is a long time. She was the longtime editor at the Star Tribune, and she was my editor for my first ever stories, many features. It was so fun working with her.
Yeah, we've been talking summer kitchens. You can text in too, 218-326-1234, but we've been hearing from a lot of people all week long.
So here's a text from Steve who says, my go-to during the summer was a watermelon Coke available at a drive-in diner we had in Wichita. It was basically cola with watermelon flavor syrup, which is similar to that vanilla or cherry flavoring you can get at the gas station fountains. We don't have that drive-in diner chain up here in Minnesota, and that flavor is no longer available. Probably for the best, because it's not the healthiest treat in the world. I don't know. Well, I love, you know, Steve, you could make watermelon syrup.
Oh,
I bet you can.
How?
Easy. Well, how would you do it? You would blend the watermelon in a blender, and then you would strain it, so you get all the pulp out, and then you'd put that in a big wide pan, and you'd add some sugar, not crazy, but some, quite a bit, and then you just slowly reduce that, and you should have watermelon syrup.
And then put it in your Coke.
And then put it in your Coke.
There we go. Wow. We heard from Pamela on our Facebook post about summer foods, who said fair food and fresh farmer's garden veggies and strawberry shortcake.
Oh, yeah. Fair food.
At the Itasca County Fair, the best corn ever. And it is dipped in this big vat of butter. It's a dollar still for an ear of corn. And that is what I always get at the fair. It is so good.
That's the way to do it. Dip it in. At the Hubbard County Fair a few years ago, this is not even a food story, but we were walking around in flip-flops and I got a corn dog stick like jammed into my foot, which is terrible. I had to have the cops take it out. It was like this huge deal. So no more corn dogs for me.
I'll keep that in mind.
Be careful.
We heard from Megan, who said best fair food is a 50-cent glass of milk in Crow Wing County. Thanks, Megan. That sounds so refreshing right now, doesn't it?
Yeah, I love those. I love that really. It's very ice cold.
Summer foods, we'd love for you to join us. We've got more coming up. You can text 218-326-1234.
Yeah, we want to hear about foods, different recipes, things that you make and eat in the summer, but no other time of the year. Mm-hmm. You know, like the special things, the things that you think, oh, summer's here, I've got it.
I am very excited for our next guest because, Amy, you share something with our next guest. You are also a James Beard Award winner twice.
Yeah.
What does it mean, first of all?
Yeah, the James Beards are, you know, they always say it's the Oscars of the food world, and it is. I mean, there is a red carpet. Karen Tomlinson is a friend of mine, and she, I've become friends with her because the first time that I ate her food, I was really just like kind of emotionally blown away because it's really connected. And you can feel that. Like there's people who say, oh, we're farm to table. It's a farm to table restaurant. Her restaurant is called Muriel in St. Paul. But it's different. And you can feel it with Karen. Like she's getting food from one area, which is her hometown in Dassel, which is a farming region a little bit northwest of the Twin Cities. And it's like she's created all these relationships with farmers and growers right there. So And she's nostalgic like I am. We have that in common too. And really, I feel like you feel like you're eating her taste memories, you know? There's meaning, there's story. But yeah, the James Beard Awards are huge. And she was just named Best Chef Midwest. And she wore her grandmother's dress that her grandma wore when she was like the corn queen.
Oh my gosh.
Of their town. And it looked amazing on her. Nobody would have known it was vintage, and it was really fantastic. Karin's the kind of person, so she does, her restaurant is really sweet. She does like kind of like themed dinners, like fun things. And I got a call from her last year, and she said, I'm doing a Dickens themed dinner for Christmas. And I was like, oh, okay. And she's, you know, she's like, we're going to do the whole roast goose. We're going to do the plum puddings. We're going to light it on fire. And then somebody has to read from A Christmas Carol, and my friend, and I'm just like, why is she telling me this? You know, like, I'm like, it's great. I love hearing about it. She's like, my friend who was going to read just canceled. She's sick. Would you come down? It's tomorrow, and read from Dickens' Christmas Carol. And I said, absolutely.
Oh my.
So like, wow. That's the kind of like meaningful, yeah, fun things that she does. And we were really lucky, I think, to catch her because she just came back from the James Beard Awards like 4 days ago. And then she went to the Food and Wine Festival. She's got a restaurant to run full time.
Yeah.
I think we were really lucky to catch her.
Yeah, we caught her in the middle of the day in her restaurant.
Yep.
We'll take it. Let's take a listen.
So, yeah, you have all these farmers and relationships, and I think about your food as being extremely relational. So you're from Dassel, and then you're, as a chef, coming back into that community and really, like, uplifting a lot of the products. What do you think of your relationship to, like, the town? Do you think that supporting them has changed Dassel in a way?
It's been really cool. I think it's been a mutually encouraging situation. You know, we're like 4 years in now, and I'm actually part on the board of a little sustainable living group out in that community too. And it's just like, there are things that were already kind of happening, evolving in that community, you know, people wanting to eat more food local, you know, realizing that they have a lot of amazing resources at their fingertips. And so it's been really cool to just find people who see that too. And I think what we do at Muriel, I think it, and like overwhelmingly, it just, I think it's been really validating. I do think it has made a difference. Actually, I have a conversation tomorrow with some farmers about getting a grant for a dehuller, which would be so exciting. It removes the hulls off of grains. You have to ship it off somewhere else to clean it, or you just are selling it for seed or something like that. But you can't, like, there are all these beautiful oats or einkorn berries that are just sitting, unable to be used or sold in our community because they can't be cleaned unless you go to South Dakota.
I kind of wonder if, like, our grandparents had the same question, like, where are we going to get the dehuller? You know what I mean? Like, or great-grandparents, you know, we're kind of going back to ways of doing things that are a little bit more careful.
So even just looking at this particular community that I've been working with, the Dassel, Cocado Hutchinson area, there were a lot of creameries and grain mills that, you know, leading up to World War II and into the 50s, 60s, they kind of started dying out. But communities were growing and processing a lot of their own basic ingredients in the Midwest until we changed our model so that they would do just one part of the job and then just ship it off somewhere else.
I mean, I think that not everybody knows how much work it is for you and your team to cook this way. You know, you're getting new stuff in and it's changing. It's not consistent. When you're bringing in things that are special and they're different, what that does is it throws that kitchen into having to work a lot harder to be adaptable and flexible. So I know it's harder.
As a creative, I think that limitation is good for creativity. I kind of foisted that on my team. No, actually, they have buy-in. We periodically reevaluate what our limitations are. And it's actually more often than not the case that they want to challenge us to go even further. It's really cool because I think they see the value of cooking food that reflects our actual seasons here in Minnesota, that reflects what farmers actually are growing. And that, and even beyond that, want to work with farmers who maybe don't have as big of a platform or access points yet to markets like restaurants, you know? And so they see that we're in a unique position to be kind of like a guinea pig buyer for people who are just getting started out or people who are retiring and wanting to grow things differently. They value that. And so it means that you always have to be engaged. It's not like when you're just ordering things, you know, from a bigger supplier, there's always going to be another green pepper. You know, you can bank on it and you just click, 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 text and order. It just doesn't work that way. You know, a lot of times I'll say, I think I'm going to be able to get this today. I think we'll have this much. And then I roll in at four in my Carhartts from the farms, right as we're about to get ready for the service. And they just, without batting an eye, deal with it and figure it out. And it's really, it's amazing. But I think it's because ingredients are so much more, well, for one, I think they taste better. And for another, they also, we just value them more. It's like night and day when you know who is growing your vegetables, who raised your hog, and you see the care and the pride that they take in doing that, and you see the work that goes into it. You just value your ingredients so much more. And so you're like, oh my gosh, yes, I want to make a huge deal out of these carrots, you know, and there you have a beautiful dish. And so it just is so different.
What she's talking about, you know, like talking to farmers about how they can, like, you know, get a dehuller for different grains is fascinating to me, because that's like another step, you know. It's like growing the stuff, she's creating the market, she's creating the recipes. That is something that grows. That's where you get the ball rolling and you create markets for new things, you know.
Well, it's new things, but then it's tied to the past.
I know. I just kept thinking about the threshing machine. My grandpa would talk about the threshing machine coming through. And if they had a dehuller, it would be the same, where you could take it from farm to farm. Maybe things got a little too industrialized, huh? I mean, which maybe. is, you know, she said, and I agree with her. She's like, yeah, feed the world. We know that why it happened. But there is something lost. And that's like all of these like varieties of grains that are really interesting, or vegetables, things that are really fascinating. And Karin really gets in the dirt. Like, she wears those wellies around. And yeah,
I loved how she was talking about the folks in the restaurant and how there's more imagination when you only have these choices in front of you.
Yeah, it's challenging. So if when she comes in with all this stuff, they get like a whole cow or a half a cow, right? Then, you know, you can't just like follow a recipe. You have to use your instincts. So I can see what she's saying. Like, who wouldn't want to work for her in that kitchen and learn how to roll with the punches and really get their hands on interesting ingredients?
We're going to hear more from Karin Tomlinson. She just won the James Beard Award for
Best Chef Midwest.
Her restaurant, Muriel, in St. Paul. And in this next segment, we're kind of hearing more about what she likes in the summertime, right?
Yep.
It's all right. You know how I like it.
This summer, what are you looking forward to cooking? What's on the menu?
Yeah. Well, the first thing that just came to mind, one farmer that I work with, he mainly has a CSA business, but then he'll let us know if he has extra things. He doesn't want them to go to waste. And he has had these beautiful heads of lettuce, and we've been cooking the lettuce. So using like blanching and hard searing and doing a little emulsified sauce over it. That's been so lovely. I just am really excited about cooked greens and lettuces this year.
What's the variety? And
so the first was a butter crunch, which is very tender, but then romaine, he had these beautiful heads of romaine last week and then this week again.
What was it you brought to my house for the fundraiser? And you had this mother pickle. Karin came to my place for, I asked her to do the Namath Art Center fundraiser with me and our friend Kristen Volk. And the three of us, it was such a blast. And you brought You have this enormous cooler. You open it up and there are all of these core containers full of various little pickles and all kinds of things. Yeah, tell them about some of those things that you play with and that mother pickle.
Yeah, probably garlic steaks in there. I think there were garlic steaks that we pickled or fermented. I mean, really all you need is salt to get that going. And then a mother pickle, basically like a sourdough starter where you use some of the old batch, the old brine to start the new. There were dragon tail radishes. For people who have gardens and for summer cooking, like just finding a couple quick and easy methods that you can do some pickle brine where you can get things started, or just have a brine solution ready to go, pour over and let, you know, something start fermenting. Finding a way that you can kind of preserve as you go throughout the summer without making it big and stressful, I think is so fun, because then you can show up to someone's house with a cooler full of cool little gems.
So many.
Like coriander, when you tear coriander bolts, the little coriander seeds, the green coriander seeds, I love. You can just look up like a caper brine recipe online and do a caper brine of coriander seeds. And that is one of my favorite things to have during the summer. Throw that on any like fish dish or whatever.
We use that. Coriander capers, basically. Is that what you call them?
Yeah.
Brined coriander, green coriander seed.
Oh,
we
use
that as a garnish on the tomato salad.
Oh, right. Remember. Yes. Yes.
And then we rubbed a little bit of that brine on the top. Just to make it shine.
Better pickled brine as a seasoning thing.
Yes.
Either in a sauce or just like on a beautiful slice of tomato. I think it's really a great way to use it.
So summer cooking, sometimes I think about winter cooking as, in terms of math, like winter cooking is addition, where you're getting more and more elaborate, where maybe you're trying to add a little zhuzhus to like roots. And then I think about summer cooking as subtraction. Do you think of it that way, or am I oversimplifying? And
no, I do. Especially, you know, this is one way that we can really embrace our four season climate here in Minnesota, because we only have a certain time of year where we can step outside and pull something from the earth and crunch down on it, vegetables and fruits and things like that in their freshest form during a time of year is just a wonderful gift, and we should embrace it, because then we'll have months ahead where we don't have that. And I will say, though, especially if you have really good ingredients that are grown in a very healthy soil, they're going to just taste better in a simpler form. If you're working with vegetables from who knows where, it may not be the same experience.
Right. Do you think that flavor follows nutrition?
Absolutely. Just makes sense to me. We will be nourished more by things that we're sharing an environment with. I just think it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It makes really intuitive sense to me too. I love this. I'm thinking about summer kitchens, and do you have any memories of summer food from the farm?
Yeah. My great aunt Shirley actually still has. She's on my family's old farm, and she's like 91, I think now, living out there by herself. And there's a summer kitchen on the property. And right now it's just full of old jars and things like that. But I've poked around in there and it's just so cool. I know that my great grandparents used to cook there, and more cooking outside because it's hot and you don't want to heat up the house too much.
Yeah. So what'd that summer kitchen look like? Was it?
Yeah, it looks almost like a little house or shed. And there was a fire and a stove, like a wood burning stove. Like a range in there. And I think we'd use that for like jarring and canning and things like that too. It's pretty cool.
It's kind of a dream.
Yeah.
I know. I would love to do that, to have the time to do that. Like I kind of stopped canning in a way because, it feels like it should be a communal activity, you know?
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
So if you ever need somebody to just sterilize jars, and
oh my gosh,
pickles.
We so should have Amy. Yes, let's do it. Let's have a canning party. I think that would be, I'm actually serious. I think that'd be really great. I think that like the rituals of preparing food and doing things that are kind of in tandem with the season too, of doing that together with people in community, is something that I want to find ways to keep alive in modern society. All of our lives are different. You know, we're responsible for different things than people were back when that was more normal. But there's something really beautiful about that. And so maybe starting with us having a canning party.
I love it.
That'd be so fun.
I mean, a canning party. That sounds fun. That's always a good idea, right?
Yeah.
But I also love what she was talking about when she was saying that she likes to preserve things in small batches.
So you don't get that overload and guilt and, you know, think you've got to do something 4 days straight in your life.
You don't have to take off the whole day or you don't have to spend a day or two, because that's what it is. It's a full day. Mm-hmm. If you're canning and making pickles, that's your day. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't do that after work that easily. I mean, maybe some people do, but I like what she was saying about you just make like one quart of something and you use the pickle brine, the fermented brine that you had from before. Just see what happens, you know, like put it in the fridge, like let it pickle, see if you like it. You know, you're no harm, no foul, you know? Right. Like when I pick rhubarb, I pick twice what I need, chop up half of it, put it in the freezer. You know, it's just the little things that, boy, you really appreciate those come winter.
Mm-hmm. We got a message that came in. Are you ready for it? It's from Mickey.
Yeah.
I look forward to when the seasons start to noticeably change and my mind can shift to the foods and dishes that I love and crave at this time of the year. A few of my summertime favorites feature fresh produce and include chicken salad made with canned chicken breast and finely chopped fresh vegetables and herbs like scallions, carrots, radishes, celery, dill, parsley. I have it with some crispy noodles and usually put it in some fresh lettuce and wrap that up, and it's delicious. Another favorite is gazpacho. I typically use Ina Garden's recipe as a starting point and then sort of make it my own, however I choose to do that at the time. Pico de gallo, you can't go wrong with a good pico de gallo with some fresh tomatoes. I mean, I think this is tomato themed. Obviously, I love fresh tomatoes. And I think nothing beats a tomato sandwich made with a juicy, warm, just picked tomato, a little salt and pepper on there, maybe cheese, maybe not, maybe toasted bread, maybe not. Ugh, now I'm getting hungry, and this all sounds so good. Happy summer eating, everyone.
That's Mickey from Grand Rapids. Thanks for that message. People are texting in. You can also give us a call. We'll be opening up our phone lines. We got a couple of texts I want to get to, because Karen talked about at the beginning, she talked about lettuce, and she'd been cooking.
Yeah, that was really fascinating.
Yeah.
Kind of like braising it, and then... Yeah. Glazing it. That sounded so good.
We had someone who texted in and said, in the early summer when the lettuce first ripens, my mom would make a simple dressing of cream, apple cider vinegar, and a bit of sugar. I miss my mom.
Aww.
Yeah.
I know that dressing, I think. My grandma made that. Yeah, it's just like if you pour cream in a bowl and then you put a little bit of vinegar in it, it'll thicken. I have a recipe that's similar in my first cookbook.
And Annie Lou in Two Inlets just texted in, my mom's cucumber salad is my summer salad. Here's a technique. Thinly slice a cucumber into a bowl, add a few pieces of chopped onion, salt the cukes, refrigerate for at least half an hour while you do your other cooking. To prepare for serving, drain the cucumbers, squeezing as much water out as you can, but do not rinse. This is different from many other recipes. Lightly bathe the cucumbers in milk. Stir in a couple of spoonfuls of vinegar. I'm currently using rice vinegar. My mom used apple cider vinegar. Serve. Excellent with fried fish, grilled chicken, or burgers. Minnesota cucumbers are the best for this. I think it's because of the rainwater.
Oh, yeah. Or just our groundwater, too.
Yeah.
Wow, so that's like two different texts in a row.
Yes.
Talking about milk, cream, thickened with a little dash of vinegar.
Yeah.
That's really fascinating. Also, Annie, Two Inlets. Yeah, then, Annie Lou, are you my neighbor?
I hope so.
That's me.
Lucky Annie Lou. Speaking of that, first time ever on Ham Radio, a walk-in. Iris joins us in the studio. Hi, Iris.
How are you?
Good. Hi, Iris.
Hi, Amy. All the talk of the milk, cream, vinegar, dressings. My great-grandma, Aggie, had a dressing that she would make with sour cream and apple cider vinegar and a little sugar, and that's what she would put on her cucumber salad too. So it's universal, maybe?
Yeah.
Universal grandma Minnesota recipe?
I mean, I hear there is a favorite recipe the rest of your family requests that you made when you were little of summer vegetables.
Yeah, so this is a...
Maybe not little. How old were you?
I was probably like 8 or 9.
Okay, so yeah.
So... I guess you could say little. I didn't think I was little at the time.
No, you
I
thought didn't. It was you thought you were 45.
45, yes. It was a New York Times cooking recipe that I modified as a 9-year-old that once again thought I was 45.
That's great.
It was a ratatouille recipe, but it was like not super traditional ratatouille. It was sheet pan ratatouille with the, you did the eggplant and zucchini and a sheet pan and you...
Oh, so you roasted it?
Yep. And so you get it roasted, golden brown, a little more texture.
Nice.
And then all your other summer veggies. And so that's been my go-to summer recipe ever since. And it's a production because it's all the produce is out of our garden. And so it's, you know, you're processing and, but it's so worth it. And I'll make like a triple batch and freeze it.
Oh, that sounds so good. So then you, after you've roasted the tomato and the, or not the tomato, the eggplant and the zucchini, do you roast the onion too?
You pan fry the onion, garlic,
okay,
tomato,
cool,
and sausage. It has sausage in it as well.
Oh, and then, yum.
Yeah, so that's like an extra booster.
So that's like your summer meal then. Mm-hmm. That's lunch.
Yes, it's lunch and then...
Or dinner.
Lunch over pasta. I have it with pasta for lunch, and then we'll do cornmeal biscuits on top of it for dinner.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, it's delicious, and it's highly requested. It's not a light kind of like meal that doesn't heat up the house, so it has to be a rainy day.
Yes.
Or you, because there's a lot of... stuff yeah. going on.
Right, right. You can't. Yeah. You don't do that on like the hottest day of the right. summer necessarily.
Right, but you do it. You pick a cloudy day, make it up, eat it over the next mm-hmm. couple weeks until you make your next batch.
That makes it even more special. You can't make it every day
right.
in the summer.
It's
what about seasoning on it?
Exclusive. See, this goes against the seasoning conversation you guys were having earlier.
Okay.
but it's salt and pepper, and I just do salt and pepper because it's all the summer vegetables, and they're so... They're just... It's not like a grocery store vegetable.
No, they don't need anything, vegetable. Right?
They don't really need anything.
I think
I'm not anti-seasoning, though.
No.
I'm pro-seasoning.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. No, zucchini in the summer from the garden is... I can't even buy zucchini at the grocery store. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just tastes... so different.
Rubbery.
Kind of fishy? I don't
yeah.
know. What is that? I don't know.
Or bleachy a little bit.
Bleachy and fishy is what we're saying. Okay. we don't like it.
Not yeah. positive descriptions.
Wow. But also eggplant mm-hmm. is, I think, a different thing from the garden.
And like a summer tomato that you is kind of warm while you're processing it and getting it ready. Like that's it. You don't need to do too much else to it.
So... Iris, you know this. I credit you because I never ate beets before you told me how to make them. And I grill them
yes.
And now I eat them all the time.
So what is the Iris recipe for?
You just told me to grill them because I didn't need to peel them, to quarter them, and just do some olive oil and salt mm-hmm. and pepper and put them on the grill. Mm-hmm.
Did I give you the recipe for like the roast the beets and then you kind of wilt the greens and mm-hmm. serve the beets
yes.
on a bed of greens with vinaigrette?
Yes.
Yeah, that's mine.
So I need some help from the both of you. I don't think I like eggplant. Convince me otherwise.
Get homegrown eggplant first.
Okay, yeah, number one.
Okay. You're going to tell me to get out of here.
No, no. people can change.
I have.
You yes. have proved it. So mm-hmm. you can, yeah, get homegrown eggplant. That's my advice. I don't know
okay.
what Amy has.
Yeah, I mean, same thing. So... like what looks fresh when you're at the market is an eggplant that's really shiny, like
okay.
really reflective, and also feels heavy. And that's all you can really tell from the outside. But once you cut into it, fresh eggplant should not, if it's picked at the right time, it doesn't have very many seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And it's those seed pods that taste bitter and a little weird to people. And also when they're cooked, they get a little slimy.
Okay.
So, they should be, just the seeds should be kind of just a faint line, and it should all be kind of like a real ivory flesh and firm, you know.
Mm-hmm. And you want to, yeah, make sure that it's a fresh eggplant.
Gotcha. Because
<That's> then <all. laughs> I think it's good. And I,
yeah,
we cook it in lots of ways. I make it in the ratatouille. I will make just roasted eggplant to snack on, salt it a little bit, and let it sit, and then pat dry to get it so it doesn't get too soggy, and then just roast it with olive oil and salt and pepper.
When it's good, it's really good. And okay, also, I think that sometimes people don't cook it long enough.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got that kind of like spongy marsh. It shouldn't be like a cotton ball. It should be like silky.
Because I haven't cooked it. I've eaten it in things when I've gone to restaurants, and it just didn't thrill me. It was kind of that texture. It was kind of like, yeah.
Also deep fried or roasted.
Okay. Hey, we're getting a few texts coming in. You guys ready for this? Yes. Favorite summer cooking? Fresh brook trout with new potatoes has been a summer favorite since I was a young man. I remember doing a quasi-regular brook trout delivery to family in our neighborhood. Wonderful memories and a wonderful meal for all.
Delivery?
Come on over.
I mean,
just give your address over.
I'm just hearing this word delivery, and I'm like, that is so sweet, though. And that,
yeah,
you know, that is what people do with fish. When they have it, they share it a lot of times. I mean, you just don't meet that many anglers who are like real protective of it. Usually, they want to cook it. They want, you know.
We also heard from someone who said, my mom has always made mint tea in the summer. It's super simple. Just add fresh mint leaves to hot water and let it cool as it steeps. It is so refreshing.
Yes, that's true.
And you only need to plant mint once.
You know exactly what we're talking about. Yes. So planting mint is what? Like kind of a rookie mistake if it's not done in the right spot?
Plant it in a pot. Just contain it. You have to contain it.
So Iris, I hear that you're really good at making pie crust. Talk to me about like summer pies. What do you have on deck?
Okay. Summer pies are in a battle with summer crisps for me. Okay. I go through phases where I do more crisps. That's a difficult word to say on the radio. I go through more crisps than pies. So we do a sour cherry crisp. We have Bali cherry trees that have formed a little grove. And so I do pie and crisp with those.
You have a sour cherry grove?
We do. It started with one, and it was one sour cherry tree that we would get maybe three off of for like years since I could remember. And then just recently it started to kind of pop up. And they're delicious, and there's so much you can do with them. And we're finally getting enough that you can actually make jam, jelly, crisp pie. And
sour cherries are so much better than sweet ones, I think.
Because before we would just, like, you savor each one. You don't make anything into a recipe with it. But now we have enough that we're doing sour cherry pie, rhubarb or strawberry rhubarb pie is really good, too.
Well, I hate to say this. We're almost out of time on Ham Radio.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we tell Iris first about the recipe of the week? It might be something she would want to cook.
Our friend Elena Lenova gave us a recipe for holodnik, which is a chilled beet soup from Belarus, which is where she's from and her family's from. And so you take cooked beets, and I think, what did she say? She roasted them, and then peeled, and then grated them coarsely, and then mixed with kefir, which is like yogurt, but thinner.
Milk.
Yeah, the drinkable yogurt.
Yeah.
Anyway, the recipe is going to be on the website, and it's a beautiful, like, really bright magenta color, and then you can garnish it with cucumber, ice, radish.
I'm always down for a beet recipe, so I'll be making it.
All right, sounds good. Check it out at kaxe.org. Look for Ham Radio. It's Amy Thielen. I'm Heidi Holton. This has been so much fun.
It's been a blast.
Ham Radio is produced at the KBXE Studios in Bemidji and made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund of Minnesota. You Know How I Like It is a licensed original song from Jeremy Messersmith. Find more Ham Radio at KAXE.org and on your favorite podcast platforms like Apple, Spotify, and more. Sign up for the Ham Radio newsletter at KAXE.org.
You are tuned in to Independent 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd,
and on your smart speaker, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. We are community-powered radio with volunteer hosts sharing their soundtrack of Northern Minnesota. Up next, History of Jazz with volunteer Paul Kibbe.